stacking up losses, I'm handing them out, yeah, I had to go delegate. It feel like I'm floating, I'm lost in the moment, that's why I can never take. They never believed that I would really fly. I had to go demonstrate, I had to set them straight. When you elevate.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Mindset Cafe podcast. It's your boy Devin, and we got another special guest for you today. Before I introduce him, I got to tell you a little bit about him. He has been on stages with, you know, figures like Ed Mylett, Mike Tyson, Tim Tebow, and many others. He is a serial entrepreneur, so I already know that this episode is going to bring a lot of value and a lot of knowledge to those aspiring entrepreneurs and those in their first years of business. But serial entrepreneur ran and owns multiple companies. You might know some of them, roofing.com, RepCard, and some others. He's in the real estate space, but I got to introduce Hunter Blue. Thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you having me. Those are high expectations you set there. I hope I can live up to that.
Oh, no. I mean, I don't doubt it. Honestly, your resume already speaks volumes, but today it's mainly about getting into the mindset of your path, your journey, right? And I mean, I know you've built it, you've lost it, you've, you know, been stressed about it. You've, you know, done already a lifetime of, you know, multiple people of stuff in your time here. And I mean, I can't wait to see what you do in the future.
Yeah, man.
So let's dive in. Your background before an entrepreneur, right? You were in the Marine Corps, and then you were in the fire department, and then you turned entrepreneur. So let's start off with, why did you join the Marine Corps?
Yeah, yes, that's a good question. So for me, man, I'm from a small town. I'm not from LA or anywhere big. A little small town here in the mountains of South Carolina. I'm still here. I love it. I came back here. And so for me, my parents were kind of in the drug scene, like they were using drugs when I was in school, and it split me and my brothers up. I went to one set of grandparents' house. My younger brothers went to my other grandma's house. And man, I just wanted to get out of town and make a name for myself and just figure my life out. I just knew that I wasn't like a traditional student. I didn't want to go to college. I wasn't super good in high school. I just wanted to get out of town. And actually, it stemmed from 9/11. I was in fifth grade for 9/11. And when that happened, man, I remember turning on the channels and just seeing like 62 of 65 channels. It was 9/11. Everyone talking about it. And you were seeing the Marines and their uniforms. And I just wanted to be in the Marine Corps. So did that for 6 years, went to the fire department, did that 5 years full time as a firefighter EMT. And I always had this big goal to be a millionaire by 30 was really the goal, man. And you start doing some quick math. Like, I'm not super smart, but I also can do quick math and realize that 24 grand a year at the fire department is not going to get it done. So yeah, I just started like some small businesses on the side, and that evolved into more, and eventually me leaving the fire department to start my own business.
Okay. I mean, that's interesting. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, when you start to realize that if you have those aspirations, I mean, you were able to take that leap. What was going through your head, you know, when you were deciding to leave the fire department? You know, did you have any, I mean, because going from the Marine Corps to the fire department, I'm not sure if you had a lot of like sales training and stuff like that. So what were your challenges right out the gate?
Yeah, what's funny, you mentioned sales training, man. I think that I was super blessed that I had a grandpa that had a landscaping company, very small landscaping company, like did 30, 40 yards, nothing big at all. But just growing up and getting out there and skipping school some days and during the summers going and working with him to make 10 or 15 bucks a day, watching him interact with homeowners, I think from a young age, I started picking up on how to communicate with people. And even, you know, starting at 5, 6 years old, going out in the field with him to then when I was 8, 9, 10 years old. And from there, wanting to go to the flea market, to the jockey lot. I don't know if you know what that is out in California, but yeah. It's like a kind of like a massive yard sale where people go. You could have hundreds of people, and I would go get stuff and resell it. I'd get, you know, old stuff that my grandparents had that they didn't want anymore. Or a good example, this is funny, is I had a dump down the road from where I grew up. It was like a quarter of a mile from where I grew up. And I would go down to that dump and find stuff that was like still usable. And one of the things that I would sell a lot of these old insulator for telephone poles are like glass insulators. And they were not useful for anything other than a paperweight. And people liked them because they were an antique. So I would get those and I'd sell them for $3 at the jockey lot. So I just started learning from an early age, like what it felt like to make my own money. So yeah, when I was at the fire department, I didn't have any of that training. It was just buying courses and investing in coaches and going to events and like, you know, spending all my money, just reinvesting into myself. And then in 2015, the year I finally decided to leave the fire department, in September of that year, I was on a trip to Louisville for a Clemson game. I'm a big Clemson football fan because they're right down the road from us here. And I was there in Louisville and I got a call that one of my good friends and my old partner from the fire department had been hit head on. He was coming into work one day on his motorcycle and a guy running from the cops swerved over the lanes and hit him head on and it killed him. And at the time I was 24 years old. He was 30 years old, brand new baby girl, beautiful wife, and he was gone, man. And it was like, for me, the first moment in my life that I felt like someone was taken too soon. Like I had lost that grandpa that I was really close to. I had lost an uncle, but those things are kind of expected, you know, when you get up in your 60s and 70s. But for Jordan, man, it was so different. And it hit me hard in that moment. I made a promise to make every day count. I ended up writing my book called Make It Count. And he was the inspiration for that book. And yeah, that happened September 17th of 2015. And just a couple months later, December 22nd of 2015, I left the fire department to go chase my dreams. And I tell you that story because, you know, one, like I realized, okay, we're not promised tomorrow. We got to take action, like do it. Don't have the regret, even if you don't die an early death. Like you don't want to have the regret later on that you didn't do it earlier. Secondly is Jordan didn't get any more days to chase his dreams. And so for me, it was almost like an extension of his legacy. It's like, dude, I'm going to go give everything I got for you and try to continue on your legacy. Cause he poured into me and he believed in me when a lot of other people didn't, you know, like it's funny cause you look at the fire department and the Marine Corps and like, you think community and brotherhood, and there is that to an extent, but there's also jealousy, man. And like people don't want you to do better than them. So like all these guys that didn't have side businesses or some of them that had side businesses didn't like that I was doing better in some areas. And he was the guy that always believed in me. So it was almost like a nod to him. Like I'm going to go out here and I'm going to make this thing count.
Wow. I mean, that's powerful. So with you, I know you're a number one bestseller. But did you write the book? Was that more recent or was that when you were in the fire department still?
No, that was 2022. I released it. I worked on it a couple of years and released it in 2022. John Maxwell did the foreword for me. We were super blessed, man. We hit number one on Wall Street Journal, bestseller, Amazon, USA Today. Like it was really cool to see that. So very thankful for that.
Well, I mean, that's awesome. That's like kudos to you for that. You know, I mean, writing a book, let alone making it that big and having someone as powerful as John Maxwell, you know, forward it, that's awesome. So I commend you.
Almost failed my 12th grade English class, man. Miss Looper, she passed me, bro. I shouldn't have passed it. She gave me like, I don't remember what it was. It was like 15 or 16 one-page essays to do as like extra credit to get my grade up to a 70. So it's funny to think about that. And then you just continue to invest in yourself. And it doesn't have to be the traditional route of college, like just invest in yourself. And for me, I was very blessed that my wife came alongside me. She helped me. I actually hired a lady to help me because that was the hardest thing I've ever done is writing that book, just because my mind is a million miles an hour and I have to sit down and write it. And then, you know, beyond that, you're trying to remember, did I already say this? How many times did I say this? Did I tell this story? Because, you know, it's 40,000 words, 50,000 words. It's a lot, dude, to try to remember. So building out a framework or hiring someone like I got a buddy, Chandler Bolt, that helps people write books and build a framework and publish it and self-publish it so you own the rights to it. Yeah, investing in yourself, you can never lose, man.
That's awesome. So let's dive into investing in yourself. You said when you were in the fire department, you were already starting to, you know, go to events and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
So what made you take that step? Were you already planning to become, you know, to basically lead the fire department when you started going to events, or were you going to events because you were doing side jobs and you were just trying to improve those side jobs?
Yeah. I think I knew pretty early on at the fire department that I wasn't going to be there forever. You know, when I started, I think I probably thought that I could manage both because one of my mentors was a captain at the fire department. He became the chief of the fire department and he had a side gig and it was trailer parks. He owned like four trailer parks worth millions of dollars. And I was like, okay, you know, I could stay at the fire department, have the steady income and the benefits and the safety and yada, yada, yada. And then I'll do the business on the side. And yeah, I mean, once I got into it, I started the first business and then started another business and, you know, I'm rotating through, dude, I'm learning. There's the saying, sometimes you win, sometimes you learn, you don't lose, you learn. And that's absolutely it. There's plenty of times I failed, quote unquote failed, but I was really just learning and failing forward. So yeah, man, I the first one was a moving company. It was like hauling and delivery. I did pretty well with that. I made more money doing that than I did the fire department, but I realized a couple of things. Like, this isn't super scalable. It's not super sexy. You know, the profit margins are decent, but it's just not like scalable. It's not something I'm going to be able to sell for a lot of money one day, and it's hard to manage. So there's like some pieces in business that I look at now when I'm looking at an industry or business to get into, like the profitability. How profitable is it? The scalability, is it exitable? So exitability, the liability, that's another one. Like, what kind of liability is involved? You know, for me, another example is for that one is like when people get on Amazon or they create a product or something, dude, I want to stay so far away from electronics. Like, unless you've got a ton of money to blow through, I'm not saying it can't be done. There's plenty of people that do it. You know, the Pavlok guy, he's done a great job, but most people are not going to have success. And like, again, not to say you can't do it, but you're always looking at odds, like risk versus reward. What's your odds of doing really well and making millions of dollars or $100 million or $1 billion on this thing? You want to be in the best odds category you can.
Right. No, I completely agree. So what was that business or what was that turning point that you decided, okay, I need to go full force and, you know, basically, you know, check out of the fire department?
Yeah, I started to fill it hardcore in 2015. And then, you know, when that happened with Jordan, with him passing, it was really like, okay, I've got to do it now. I mean, it was just literally a couple months went by and then I went ahead and turned in my resignation, said, hey, I'm out. I'm going to go chase this thing. And, you know, what's funny, man, is the thing that I thought I was going to do full time when I left the fire department crashed and burned within a month. I had a couple guys I was working on this project with, some tech stuff with e-commerce, and within a month it went bust. Just some issues with coding and one of the guys involved, and like, long story, but it just didn't work out within a month of me leaving the fire department. And when I left the fire department, I'll never forget, my chief looked at me and he said, Baloo, are you sure you know what you're doing? And I took it as an insult, you know, in the moment. And I was like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. Like, I will not be back here. You don't have to worry about that. And he's like, well, you know, this is like pretty safe here. You have the benefits and all the things. And it was just a slap in the face to me. And I was like, I'm going to figure it out. So when that went bust, I'm like, oh my gosh, you kidding me? Like, I will not go back to the fire department. Just my ego wouldn't let me do that, right? I'm too stubborn. So it was a grind, man, just figuring it out. I had saved up a good bit of money from like flipping boats and cars and trailers and real estate and stuff while I was at the fire department, but I blew through most of that money in the first year, dude, just reinvest into myself. It wasn't on stupid stuff. Like, me and my wife didn't do any crazy trips or buy nice cars or anything like that. It was just reinvest into myself. And I've kind of always been like that, like delayed gratification. I know the payoff will come. And it took some time for us to grow, you know, that first business, Cornerstone, our roofing company, and then sell that thing for tens of millions of dollars. But it happened with time. And so that's still the mindset. Even now, like, we bought that company back. We build other companies. We partner with other companies. But I'm just very long-term focused in everything that I do, knowing that the payoff will come one day.
That's huge. I mean, that's the biggest part of it, is realizing that. Because I think it's over-glorified to an extent, like becoming an entrepreneur, like you're going to be an instant millionaire and, you know, all of a sudden you're going to be feet up on the beach with a Corona in your hand. And it's like, yeah, that's not it. Like, you go from trading an 8-hour day to 24-hour days.
Especially, and if you're a real entrepreneur at heart, man, I feel like when the payoff comes, you're ready to go again. Like, and I hate saying this about myself. I wish you could hear it from other people's perspective, but like the day that we closed on Cornerstone and the money hit my bank account, we were at a retreat, running a retreat for 30 other business owners. And it was like business as usual, you know, like, okay, what's next? I'm ready to go. There was like very, of course, there was a little like celebration of like, man, it freaking finally paid off. I remember that. But it's not like we went and did some big vacation and took off for months or anything. No, it's just back to work, like business as usual. How do we grow the next one? And I think for like people that are truly entrepreneurial and have that long-term vision, that's how they are.
No, and I'm 100% in alignment with exactly what you're saying. I think that's so powerful. And you have to realize that, you know, becoming an entrepreneur, if you're in it for the quick exit, and then you just want to be done for the rest of life, like you're playing a finite game, you know, and entrepreneurs like yourself, like myself, like we're in it as an infinite game. Like, well, there is no ending. And if you're looking at your problems as short term and we're looking at as long term, like you're going to get beat if you're only have the short term view. So I think that's huge that, you know, you do mention that, because I have heard that, and, you know, some other people have said that as well. And I think it's powerful. And that's a realization. That's the truth of entrepreneurship. Right. So going into, you know, you started the roofing company and stuff like that, like what led to the, you know, it got sold and you mentioned your retreat. What led to the events? Like, you know, what was that next progression from, you know, the roofing company and stuff like that?
Yeah. So really it was before I sold the roofing company. I'll give you a quick run through so, timeline wise. I leave the fire department end of 2015, basically beginning of 2016 is when I start my entrepreneurial journey full time. I told you that didn't work out. So by end of 2016, I'm trying to figure out the next move. I had been doing some marketing for roofers. So I started a roofing company called Cornerstone Construction as a case study, started building out the website, launched that in May of 2017, kind of took it like not real serious. I hired a couple of people that knew roofing. I didn't know anything about it. Let them run it. I was just focused on building the brand and the ads, knowing that one day it could grow. Although I didn't know it would grow to what it would become, but starting to grow it. So we did like $1 million that year, $2 million the next year. And I'm really like half in, half out at best those 2 years. End of 2018, I had come back from consulting a company up north. They really crushed it. Like I helped them a lot. They really crushed it, made a ton of money. And I'm like, dang, dude, I just need to focus on my company. Like if I can help other people do this, then I can do it for myself. So into 2018, I start to buckle down. I bring in an ops person to help with the company. In the 2019, January of that year, I launched what I called Six Figure Blueprint, which is a training platform for sales reps to be able to come into our business and earn six figures in commissions. I hired our first group of sales reps. And then we started to grow from there. We did, you know, $5 million that year. The next year we rolled into the first eight figure year and never looked back from there. That year in 2019, I started to miss the community and the brotherhood and the camaraderie of the fire department and the Marine Corps. And so I started Revolt, which at the time was called Bold Brotherhood because it was just for men. It's changed since then. In 2020, we changed it to Revolt so it could include women, but our mastermind, Revolt. So I did that, started throwing events. At the end of that year, we threw a roofing-specific event called RoofCon. That first year, we had 39 people at it with like 10 vendors. I was super embarrassed, brought in some great speakers, and I was super embarrassed, man. And I was like, I'm probably not going to do this again. But when we left that event, if there was 39 people, like 38 of them were talking about how it was the best event ever, because we didn't just focus on roofing and making money and like, oh, this is a break from your family. It was very much personal development, leadership development, how do we become better men, better fathers, you know, better uncles, better business owners and people in our community. And so that next year, man, it just started to multiply. That event, we went from 39 people and 10 vendors to 881 people and 50 vendors. We continued to grow to where it was 2,200 vendors or 2,200 people, 125 vendors, all the way up to this past year. And then in 2022, we had 5,000 people this past year. And then the year before that, we had 250 vendors. So it's been a crazy ride, man, seeing the event grow. We have a ton of fun. You mentioned some of the speakers we bring in for that. Our Revolt retreats, we do those 8, 10, 12 times a year. It just depends. I just got back last week from a retreat that we ran for business owners in Utah. We had about 50 or so business owners out there. It's just a great time, man. We enjoy it. We do a lot of fun stuff. We help each other. We bring in speakers. And I just get to live my dream life. So I'm so, so thankful for that.
No, that's awesome. And actually, I saw, you know, one of my friends, Doug Mitchell, speaking at one of the RoofCon events as well. So
I was on his podcast yesterday, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
He was on the podcast a few months back. So, you know, that's awesome. So do you think that you starting the mastermind and you starting the events and stuff like that stemmed from the knowledge and the inspiration and basically the guidance that you got when you were coming up as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, to a degree. You know, I just wanted to create a community of like-minded people. I know that's so overused, like-minded. People say that all the time, but it's true. You know, like people for me that were high integrity, leadership, and legacy focused, not just about the dollar. Like, that's cool. I want to make a bunch of money. Like, I always tell people, billionaire bust. But impact before income, self-worth before net worth. Like, when we structure our retreats, that's how it's structured. We're going to talk about ourselves first and build ourselves up, and then we'll talk about the money stuff. And that's how we've done everything. That's how we've grown the companies. You know, we acquired roofing.com. We sold Cornerstone, bought Cornerstone back. I invested in a rep card. Like, anything that I look into, I do growth partnerships where we help people grow their company. We get a small piece of equity. Every time it has to be the right leader. I don't care how good the product is, dude, like, at all. It could be a $1 billion product, and they're like, hey, I'll give you half of it. If it's a crappy person, and this is proven, like, I know it's easy to say that on a podcast. I've turned away lots and lots and lots of money publicly. This is public because this was a deal with a public company because the people didn't have the right values. To me, that's everything, man, because you're just going to stress yourself out and not have fun anymore. And I've learned the hard way that when you hang on to people inside of your company that are cancer, when you do deals with people that are not of the same values as you, it is not worth the money at all.
Wow. I mean, that's amazing right there. And I think that that's so awesome that you look at your partnerships or your future partnerships in that way, because at least in my perspective, if you are an entrepreneur, you're a business owner, or you're in it for the money, that it has almost like a vibe that comes off to the customer, to the team. And when you're actually there to impact lives and, you know, really focus on that, like, money will come, don't get me wrong. Like, you know, yeah, we're in it, you know, we're in a business, but at the same time, like, when you're focused on changing people's lives or helping other people, like, you will grow in return. But if you focus on the return and not the actual, you know, giving part of it, then it's one of those things where, again, people start to get that feeling and it doesn't lead to as much growth and potential, or at least happiness in my view.
Fulfillment, right? Like, John Maxwell says all the time, significance is about others, success is about us.
Yep.
And significance is what we're all chasing. Like, we could go down a rabbit hole here, and I won't, but yeah, I mean, that's the truth, man. Success is like, it's the plaque on the wall. You know, it's the award we got when we were 10 that we're still proud of. It's the state championship. It's the, you know, the certificate from the Marine Corps, from being an EMT. Like, those things are success, and they feel good for a minute. Significance is when you know you changed someone's life. Significance is when I pick up my phone and I get a text every day because someone came to my retreat 3 years ago and they hit me up and say, hey, man, it saved my marriage. I was about to get a divorce. That makes me feel significant. I felt great when I hit a home run and my grandpa gave me $20. You know, that was success. It felt good for a minute, but it went away. This stuff lasts. That's significance.
That's so awesome. I mean, that's what we're trying to do with the franchise as well. I mean, literally pretty much following in your footsteps in the view you have with your partnerships. I know we just launched the franchise company, but we're trying to create that mastermind aspect to it as well, because we are creating a community. Like, don't get me wrong, like, we're in business, but I love fitness because of those text messages, because of those customers or those clients that come in and they're so amped up to tell you their results, and that, like, fuels your fire and your motivation, right? So it's one of those things where, when, as we're building out our franchise, if that's the same thing that we're doing, that we're looking for other people that at least have a passion for wanting to change other people's lives, right? So I think that that's huge that you view your growth in that way, because it's easy, especially at the level you're at, just to make the quick deal with the public company for, you know, huge dollars. But when you stay true to your core values, you know, it that leads to a life, you know, of fulfillment, like you said. I want to touch into, you know, your home life, because you have so many things going on, and I know you're a father of two. How has that been with you, like, scaling up to multiple businesses to now, like, do you set aside a time for your family? You know, how has that support system been?
Yeah, man, that's, for me, I'm not as like structured as some people would think. Like, I know some entrepreneurs, some CEOs that are like every minute of their day, they have to have documented and scheduled. I'm very much more of a free spirit when it comes to that. Now, in recent years, I've become more scheduled than I used to. You know, like, I have color coding for each thing. So like podcasts, when I'm on a podcast, it's a certain color. When I'm traveling, it's a certain color. Something that's urgent, so like my son's soccer games, I'll mark those as urgent, which is red. So I know that's like a, hey, this can't be moved. There might be like an internal meeting that's marked gray that I know that I can move around if I need to, but there's certain things I can't. So, you know, I try to do better with that. I try to be intentional with my time, because, you know, like my son, he's 5 years old now. He's playing soccer. He's playing sports. We practice wrestling, practice baseball, and not nearly as much as I should. You know, I still know that. I still know there's more time that I could spend with him. And I'm my own worst critic on that. Like, I want to do better, and I will do better, and I'll keep getting better about it. My daughter, you know, she's a year and a half now, and she's so much fun. She's starting to freaking say all kind of words and run around everywhere. And I can't wait for her to start playing sports and doing things and being able to communicate a little bit more. And then you have my wife, you know, that's involved with Revolt, involved with the foundation, and she's helping out and doing her thing. And it creates a funny dynamic where it's like, there's home life and then there's business too. And so trying to separate those things at times to where we're not talking about business all the time at the house, and we can just be a family and enjoy it. There's little things that I try to set up to make sure that I get that quality time. One of those things is for my son. I don't have this for my daughter yet just because she's so young, but for my son, like every night, we do at least one boys' night where we just go out on the town, we have fun, we go ride go-karts, go play arcade games, go to a movie, whatever. And then for my wife, once a quarter, we do a getaway where it's just us. So we'll go, you know, even if it's an hour away to Asheville, North Carolina, and stay at the Grand Bohemian and then go eat at the Brazilian Steakhouse or whatever, like, we'll go spend time together. So I think it's just important to do those things and set aside time. But most importantly, man, is just having that understanding of the mission. Like, what is the mission for you and your family? There's a couple of things that we have done. Like, for one, I have my personal life mission, and my wife gets that. She understands it. She's on board. And so when I have to travel all the time and I have to sacrifice and stay late at the office, she gets it. Not to say that we're not normal like anyone else and have times where we bicker at each other and get upset, right? But for the most part, like, it's great. She gets it. She's bought in because she sees the messages. She sees the posts on Facebook. She hears from dudes' wives about how much they've changed since they've come to a Revolt retreat. So super cool, because we do, you know, men's retreats. She leads the women's retreat. She's leaving in 2 days to go to Utah to lead the women's retreat. And then we do a couples retreat every year too, where everyone comes together. So she sees that. And then on a kid's level, we created this exercise called Embedded, where we teach people how to create essentially values. We call them life laws for their kids. Help create these life laws that your kids are going to grow up and live by. And so for my son, he's five. And when he was 4 years old, he had these things down pat, learned, like, he gets them. And he's five, you know, so he doesn't completely understand what they mean yet, but he knows them. And the ones that he does understand, their triggers, and they remind him when he's in the right situation. So, you know, his five life laws are man of integrity, value people, positive attitude, purpose driven, and chase greatness. So just two as an example are man of integrity. That was the first time man of integrity was the first one that, like, we saw him realize that it meant something. He found a sticky note out here. We have like a gym in our headquarters here for everybody to work out. And he saw a sticky note on the ground, and he picked it up and he came running up to Maggie, my wife. And he said, "Mom, my life laws, my life laws." And she's like, "What are you talking about?" And he was 4 years old at the time. And she's like, "What are you talking about?" Like, thought maybe that I had written down his life laws and he was handing them. And she's like, looking at it, it's not life laws. And he's like, "Dad said, if I pick up trash, that's being a man of integrity." And so the whole point is like, when no one's looking, do the right thing. Now, he didn't completely get it. He kind of bragged on himself, but I'm happy. You know, at least he did it. There's been times we've been at the park where he just darts off. We're walking towards the park. He darts off by himself. I'm like, "What are you doing, bud?" "I'm going to get the trash." So just little things like that. Positive attitude's an easy one. Chase greatness. When he's whiny and we're freaking 10 o'clock at night, because, you know, people might hate on me for this, but dude, I'm not like a put my kids in bed at 6 o'clock at night. Like, my son stays up with me late and we hang out because that's my time with him. But we'll be out there in the garage at 10 o'clock at night. We've got a 3-car garage built out with a gym and jujitsu mats, and we'll be playing baseball and stuff. And when he's whiny and like, "I'm ready to go inside," or whatever, da da da, we're going to do one more. We're going to chase greatness. We're going to be the best we can. And so just those little seeds to try to help, you know, build him up and put those in his head as he goes on through life.
That's awesome. I mean, I have a daughter that's 2, so, you know, not much older than your daughter.
I have an entire worksheet and video I can send you on embedded. If you would like to build those for your kids, just hit me up, or anyone listening, you can just message me on Facebook and I'll give it to you.
No, definitely. And we'll definitely put your Facebook and your show in the show notes and everything too. But no, definitely please send that. That's awesome. I think that's so cool that you're implementing those things with him, and not just, you know, basically telling him like, "This is what you do." Like, you're teaching him and you're showing him. And then even through spending time with him, it is, you know, late. I mean, that's the same kind of style I've set up with my daughter. Like, she gets home and she wants to wrestle until like 9:30, you know? So it's one of those things where that quality time with you already, and seeing you work and build these businesses and everything like that, is already going to show him indirectly all those, you know, life laws. With your wife, you know, working in Revolt and everything like that, but you're still doing other businesses as well. What's the secret to holding that stress level and that healthy family relationship? Because it's one thing to have your spouse as a business partner, right? But when you have other businesses going on, just like someone that maybe their spouse isn't a part of their business, they don't get to see all the stresses or the struggles that you're going through. So as men, unfortunately, we do hold it in, you know, a good amount of the time. What is the secret to you balancing that out, or at least, you know, kind of letting your spouse in if that's something that you do?
Yeah, I think it goes back to what I mentioned before, just the alignment on vision, just being completely all in, each of you understanding. You know, for her being involved with Revolt, it's not like a full-time thing. It's her managing the group throughout the year, planning the retreats when there's the retreats. And we have a team too to help her. But she does a great job. Like, in so many ways, she does a better job than I do when it comes to the retreats, because I'm just not an ops person. Like, I'm not super organized. I'm like, "Hey, you guys, we should do X, Y, Z, but I don't know how to put it all together. Can you help me?" Versus she's out there getting these beautiful bags made. And like, for this retreat she has this week, she has these super pretty freaking towels made with the branding on it. I'm like, "Dude, I want one of those towels. Why did we never do that?" So it's cool to see her do those things and us just have that alignment on the vision. But at the same time with the other businesses, no, man. I mean, I don't just go and talk to her about everything, because I don't want her stress to rise when she, if I did tell her about every little issue and every little business that I carry and I worry about, because I don't want her thinking about it too, because then it's only going to create more stress within the relationship. So there's, you know, outlets for me, and those outlets, unfortunately, aren't even like my own mastermind, because I'm there for those guys so they can use my ear and I can listen to them, not the other way around. So I have my own outlets. You know, I pay for a coach, one-on-one coach, that I talk to every month. I talked to him yesterday for 90 minutes, you know, just dumping, brain dumping. A lot of times it's just him being a sounding board for me. But I think any entrepreneur, every entrepreneur should have a coach, a mastermind, a group, something that they're involved with.
Well, that's awesome. And I think that is so important, because you don't want to necessarily bring everything home or stress out, you know, your significant other with the problems, because again, it's just going to create more stress in the relationship, in the household. But there needs to be an outlet, right? There needs to be an outlet. Sometimes people just be like, "Okay, well, yeah, I'm going to work out and that's my outlet." But we do need an outlet of having that soundboard, like you said, for your coach. I mean, I have a mentor as well as, you know, I'm part of a mastermind too and stuff like that. So it's like one of those things where being around the cliche term, like-minded people, but also being around other people that you can vent to without judgment. And that's going to be that, you know, listening ear and give you advice if needed, right? Is so big and so important that being an entrepreneur, like it doesn't need to be a lonely game, right? Yeah. Other people have overcame those obstacles. Other people have gone through those stresses. So why not talk to other people and overcome your stresses sooner, right?
You know what's super cool, man, is we do a fireside chat at our Revolt X retreats. We run all kind of retreats, and we have one we call our Revolt X retreat, which stands for the Revolt Experience. And it's kind of like our foundational retreat. It's what most people come through first before they join or come to a member retreat or whatever. And last year, I created this form, and it's called the Struggle Form. And so I have people go through, and me and my team, we went through and we brain dumped every struggle we could think of that people have brought up at retreats in the past. And this is for men and women. So it could be like one bucket is addiction. So porn addiction, sex addiction, alcohol, nicotine, any kind of drug you could think of. Another bucket is past trials. So you've been abused. Maybe you're a felon. Maybe you have PTSD. Maybe someone in your family died and that's still rocking you hard. Maybe you had a bad breakup with a partner, whatever. Then there's relationships. Are you having a tough time with your marriage, your spouse, your kids, your stepkids, your ex-wife, whatever. And there's all these things, like 50 different things. And then for each one we have on this page, there's a check mark. There's two boxes. The first box is for I'm currently dealing with this struggle. And the second box is I've overcome this struggle. So in a scenario, you could have one lady at a retreat that says, hey, I've been abused, sexually abused, and I can't get past it. Like, I'm really struggling with it. And then you have, on another hand, you have a lady that says, hey, this has happened to me. And while you can never fully get over it, she's worked through it and started to overcome it. She feels like she can help and provide guidance to this other lady. And so we created these forms for that purpose. And so we have them do it. And at the fireside, dude, we go through my team and we'll match. Boom, 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 boom. And it's usually about 95 to 100% of the time, every current struggle, there is another person in the room. And this is only with 30 people. This isn't like our big group of 100. This is where 30 people, every freaking one of those that has a struggle, there's someone else in the room that's been through it and overcome it that can help. And so we just, at that point, play matchmaker, man. It's like people are people. We all deal with the same things. Don't feel like you're unique. Don't feel like you're the only one that has to deal with this stress and this self-doubt and this imposter syndrome and all the things that we deal with as entrepreneurs. We're here to help you. And so, yeah, getting around the right group, man, is invaluable. Like, people don't realize the value of energy. And when you can let go of some of that stuff and surround yourself with people that make you dream bigger and realize what's possible, your energy goes up and your value is higher.
100%. And I think that's so cool that you do that. That's, I mean, as simple as that sounds, it's the principle of it. And that's why we join masterminds. That's why we join these networking groups. It's, I mean, coming from you, let's say, if you were just get on stage and, you know, give the answers to all the check marks, right? It's a lesson. It's like at school, you're listening to a lecture, right? But when you have someone that is your peer, essentially, in these events, giving you their perspective in there, it resonates different sometimes.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's amazing that you're doing that and you guys decided to switch that. Honestly, I'm interested to see how that affects when you have like a group of, you know, 100, 300 people that do it. Cause I think that'd be huge, like little breakout groups and everything. So is Revolt, is that your international event that you guys do?
So Revolt is the mastermind. Yeah. We have the mastermind for business owners. We have the retreats. We do have a smaller conference that we do. We started 2 years ago. It's way smaller than a roof town. We'll probably grow it at some point, but just keeping it small right now. We have done, like, I did that trip to Africa with Revolt. We took a small group over there to do some mission work. That was pretty cool. And then we have like apparel and stuff.
And you got malaria or something like that twice?
Yeah, malaria in Africa. Yeah. It's a wild ride, man.
That's crazy. How, what was that experience like? Did you have to heal up over there? Or did you have to fly back?
Yeah. So it's a 2-week incubation period. So you don't know you have it for for 2 weeks basically. And I got it the last night I was there. Like, I know exactly when I got it. The entire trip we were there, it's like 10-day trip or something. Didn't see any mosquitoes till the last night at a restaurant. They're all flying around. There's candles and stuff. And they never landed on us. And so I'm like, cool, whatever. We go back to the hotel. Early in the week, I had written this song. I'm not musical at all, dude. Like, I can't play any instruments. I can't sing. I'm not musical, but I've always enjoyed writing. And I woke up at like 3 a.m. and I wrote this song called Need You Now. And I had it done by the time my buddy Joey woke up at like 7 a.m. And he's a worship pastor back in the States. I'm like, hey, man, help me put this song together. Like, I don't know anything about chorus, pre-chorus, bridge, whatever. So he helps me. We put it together. That last night, we stayed up till 3 a.m. recording it with five Ugandans that were there. And they were like on a praise and worship team. Beautiful voices, man. So we write the song. We record this song. And at the end of it, we just gather up and we're about to leave. And there's like 12 or so of us, like five Ugandans and six or seven of us. And we start praying, and the Ugandans are praying for the Americans. And dude, I'm telling you, I felt like such a piece of crap, but I'm like, I got to stop them from praying because I was in flip flops. They tell you to wear long pants and shoes and long shirts and stuff because of the mosquitoes. And I don't listen well. So I'm in flip flops and my feet are getting tore up and I'm like just boom, boom on my feet. And so literally the Ugandans stopped praying and I'm like, hey, can we just sit down and like, we'll just openly talk to you guys about how we feel about you and we love you and we're rooting for you, whatever. And sure enough, dude, 2 weeks later, I found out I had malaria and it was a wild ride. We have this challenge that we started in 2019 called Fearless 44 and I was doing the challenge and one of the tasks is a Facebook Live. So I'm like, on my Facebook Live, and one of my buddies that has an orphanage he supports in Uganda and knows of people get malaria all the time, he knew I went, and he hits me up. He's like, dude, are you sure you don't have malaria? Because you look super weak. I can like see it in your face, your eyes. I'm like, no, there's no way. Day goes by, he hits me up again. I just keep putting him off, like, no, it's not a big deal. He hits up my wife, and dude, it just got so bad. I just remember laying in the shower. We got this big shower with a couple shower heads, and I'm like just shivering, freezing, and hot water coming out on me. And my wife finally walked in and was like, I'm calling the hospital. We're going. Okay. And so, yeah, man, went, battled it out for like a week in the hospital, got out. They said I was good. 2 weeks later, it comes back. This time I have it worse, like higher levels. And the first time they had said that had we waited two more days, me and another guy got it, that we would have been dead. And so we got malaria and I got E. coli the second time. So it was a wild ride, man. But I learned a lot, gained a lot of perspective in that hospital bed of just what's important because I'd had a tough season of life leading up to that. And so, yeah, just it changes your perspective. You realize what's important in life, your family and the things that you're doing and the things that aren't as important. And so I was grateful for that, man.
Wow, that's crazy. So before we wrap up, I like to ask everybody, you know, if let's say your companies, hypothetically, your companies, everything is gone and you have one message to leave, you know, for future generations, what would that one message be?
Yeah, man, it is lead with legacy in mind. Lead with legacy in mind. Everything you do, like make legacy focused decisions. I call it legacy focused leadership. Like that's kind of what I want to be remembered for is legacy focused leadership. Making decisions today that aren't going to necessarily provide a result today or tomorrow, next month, next year, or maybe not even in your lifetime. It might be 100 years from now that a result comes. But because you made that investment into that person or to that company or that product or whatever it was, you recorded a podcast, you did something like this, maybe 100. This is super cool to think about, man. Like we might only get 300 views on this video in the next 10 years, but then the right person sees it and shares it 10 years from now and 1 million people see it. We might be dead and gone. We might have died in a plane crash or who knows what, but we made an impact. That's our legacy. It's not about how much money we left. It's not about the inheritance. It's not about the house, the land. It's not about the sign on the football stadium that you played at or the sign coming into the town that says, hey, home of Hunter Ballou. That's not legacy to me, dude. Legacy is the impact you continue to make on people after you're gone. So lead with legacy in mind. Make decisions today that just won't impact you today or others today, but others 100 years from now.
Boom. That right there, that's a mic drop. That was awesome. And I think that's an amazing, you know, lesson to leave. Where can people follow you or connect with you?
Yeah, man, I'm pretty easy. Just Hunter Blue on Facebook. I'm really not like on all the socials. If you look me up on Facebook, it's just Hunter Blue, and you can DM me. I've got tons of free resources I'm happy to give you.
Thank you so much. And make sure you guys leave a review and share this with a friend, especially, you know, that aspiring entrepreneur or that entrepreneur that is going through some rough times that, you know, can connect with Hunter or with any of our other guests. But make sure you guys share the show, because that's how we grow. But thank you so much, Hunter, for taking the time out of your busy day and hopping on today with us at the Mindset Cafe.
Appreciate you, brother. Thanks for having me.